I invite all the cells of my body to join me so that I can listen. It's a community of cells, every kind of cell, neurons, and all the other cells. And we can invite all the cells to listen. The bell the sound of the bell should penetrate deeply into every cell. And then the concentration is wonderful. We know very well there are genes. Our ancestors, our parents are there in every cell of our body. This is scientifically speaking. Our ancestors are always there, always alive because we are here. I am here, so my ancestors are here. It's logical. I'm alive, so my ancestors are still alive. So you can invite all your ancestors to join you in listening to the bell. And this is a deep listening that can save us. With mindful breathing, we can calm the body, pacify the feelings, the perceptions. And our ancestors will listen with us. And as we know how to relax, as we listen, to open ourselves, we know how to relax. That's how the bell is able to enter deeply into each one of our cells. And we touch. Bell touches the presence of all our ancestors. Peace is possible. Healing is possible for us and for our ancestors. Because our pain, our suffering, were also transmitted by our ancestors. And this deep listening is to cradle, to embrace that collective suffering in us that also reflects the suffering of our world. Sound of the bell doesn't exactly come just from outside, it comes from our heart. People listen, they may hear the sound, but it may not have this reflection. It is we who transform the sound of the bell into a message of peace, of compassion, in order to calm ourselves, heal, and transform ourselves. And our ancestors in us are practicing with us, and they receive that healing and transformation at the same time that we do. So listening to the bell is a very deep practice. If each one of us listens in this way, the collective energy of the Sangha will be very wonderful, powerful, and will have the power to heal, to nourish. It is with mindfulness, the energy of mindfulness, and with concentration that we listen. Mindfulness is generated by our practice of breathing, of walking. We bring our attention to the breath, to the step. We walk, we breathe, and we begin to generate the energy of mindfulness. The energy of mindfulness is an energy that helps us to be there, mind and body together, and it's done very quickly, just 2 or 3 seconds. And when we're really there, we are aware of everything that's going on in the present moment, everything that's going on in our body, in our feelings, in our perceptions, and what's happening around us. That is mindfulness. That helps us to do that. So mindfulness is the heart of Buddhist meditation, and every one of us can very well generate that energy that can help take care of so many things. With mindfulness, with the energy of concentration, we can make a breakthrough into reality. It may be a cloud, a child, or an anxiety. We can make a breakthrough and begin to understand the nature of that cloud, of that person, or of that anxiety. And with that insight, with that understanding, we will be able to liberate ourselves from the pain. So meditation consists of generating the three kinds of energy: mindfulness, concentration, and insight. To really love, we have to learn how to nourish happiness and how to take care of suffering, how to handle our suffering. Happiness is possible, even right now. Suffering may be there, it's always there. But with the energy of mindfulness, concentration, and insight, we can very well take care of that suffering. It's an art, it's a practice. Let's imagine we have lost our job. There are feelings, fear, anxiety about these kind of things that bring us down. It is true, there's a suffering to lose our work, but our way of responding is what really matters. Because things are always impermanent. A suffering can arise at any moment and to any person. There are people who have lost their job, but who can continue? Who can accept any job? And be happy with whatever job they can get. So it depends on our mind, on our way of thinking, of seeing things. That is what determines whether we suffer more or less. With mindfulness, with concentration, we can see all these things. And we don't have to suffer. As a lover, we should learn the art of nourishing happiness and love. Love is a flower, very beautiful. We have to know how to nourish love. Otherwise, it will die. The Buddha said, nothing can survive without food. Nothing can survive without food. Your love, too, needs food. If you don't know how to nourish your love, it will die, one way or another. And that's why to love means to learn the art of nourishing our happiness. Yesterday we spoke about the practice that can bring us beauty, freshness, stability, solidity, peace, and freedom. We practice this, and we help the one we love to do the same. The practice is not difficult, and if we succeed, the other person will see that right away, and the other person will be convinced about that practice. How did you do that? And then you have the opportunity to explain, to share your practice with him or with her. In a difficult situation, you stay calm. You can smile. Mindfulness is recognizing what is there in the present moment. What is there is you still alive. Breathing in, I know I'm alive. Your youth is still there. Breathing out, I smile to life in me and around me. Breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. Breathing out, I smile to my eyes. I'm aware of the fact that my eyes are still in good condition. This is wonderful. Good thing. To have eyes in good condition is a wonderful thing. Because you have eyes in good condition, there's a paradise of shapes and colors available at every moment. You only need to open your eyes to get in touch with the world of shapes and colors. It's a paradise. Happiness is possible immediately. There are those among us who have lost their eyesight, who have become blind. We have lost our eyesight, and with that, the paradise of shapes and colors. And what we want more than anything is to get back our eyesight. But if we have eyes in good condition, that paradise of shapes and colors is available to us. So open your eyes. Enjoy. And when you look at the person you love, if he or she is absorbed in an anxiety, you can help that person to get out. Darling, do you see the sun? Do you see the spring coming? This is mindfulness. Mindfulness is for making us aware of what is happening now. Not only the conditions of happiness are there in me, but they are around me. In the practice of deep relaxation, it's like this. We begin to observe our body. We may begin with our eyes. Breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. Breathing out, I smile to my eyes with a lot of gratitude, with a lot of love. And you go down by the nose, the mouth, and you do a kind of scan of your body, not with an x-ray, but with the mindfulness ray. You scan through all the parts of your body with the ray of mindfulness. Breathing in, I'm aware of my heart. Breathing out, I smile to my heart with a lot of love. My heart does so much for my well-being. It works non-stop to irrigate all the cells in my body. I'm grateful to my heart. I get to stop and sleep, but my heart never stops. And yet, I have done things to hurt my heart. I've drunk too much alcohol. I have smoked. I am not very friendly or kind to my heart. And as you breathe like that, you embrace your heart with mindfulness. You can see things like this. This is insight that transforms us, that heals us. And you know exactly what you should consume and what you should not consume to be kind to your heart, which is a condition of your happiness. And likewise, you go through all the organs, all the parts of your body in this way. This is the contemplation of the body in the body. There's a sutra that teaches us how to meditate on our body, because the body contains the cosmos. In our body, we can find the kingdom of God and the Pure Land of the Buddha also. We can get in touch with the Buddha, with God, with our ancestors, spiritual and genetic. So the body is an object of meditation, contemplation of the body in the body. This is a text, a basic text in Buddhism. So mindfulness has this capacity to remind us that there are conditions of happiness available inside and outside. And every time you get in touch with one or more of these conditions, happiness comes right away. And if you can do that easily, every day, your loved ones will be able to do it too. Because when we love, we want to look in the same direction, the direction of happiness, of love, right? So with mindfulness, with meditation, we nourish our happiness, our well-being, and the happiness and well-being of our beloved. Simple. The teaching of Plum Village is that happiness is possible right now, today. And we know what to do for our happiness to be possible now, with mindfulness, with concentration, and with those energies, we learn how to handle our suffering. To handle our suffering, that's the practice of meditation. Suffering is not necessarily only negative. Suffering can teach us a lot. And we can begin with suffering, we can create happiness. In Plum Village, we talk about lotus flowers that we grow here in all the hamlets, and we know very well that you've got to have mud for the lotuses to grow. Without mud, no lotus. Without suffering, there's no happiness. That's the teaching of the Buddha. So we should not discriminate against our suffering. We have to learn how to embrace suffering, to cradle our suffering and the suffering of the world with a lot of tenderness. That is possible with the energy of mindfulness. It is with that energy that you can recognize the presence of that suffering in you and in the world. And it is with that energy that you cradle that suffering, embrace that suffering with a lot of tenderness. You continue breathing. You continue walking to be able to keep generating that energy of mindfulness. So you can continue to cradle that suffering, and the Sangha around you can help you recognize and embrace your suffering. And it is possible every day with the Sangha. It becomes much easier. Yesterday we spoke about deep listening. Listening deeply to suffering that is in us, that may have been transmitted by our ancestors, by our parents. And it is very important to come back to ourself, to recognize our suffering and learn how to cradle it. There's a song. I don't know if it exists in French, but there's a song for cradling our suffering. as suffering is one energy, but there is also mindfulness as a second source of energy. So mindfulness as energy embraces the suffering. The practice is not for fighting. It's not to suppress. The practice is to embrace with a lot of tenderness our suffering. Just like a mother taking a baby, her baby into her arms, that baby is suffering, crying. And the mom takes the child into her two arms with a lot of tenderness. And that tenderness begins to penetrate into the body of the child. Even if the mom doesn't understand why the child is suffering, she needs some time to find out what the difficulty is. But just the fact of taking the child into her arms with this tenderness can already bring a relief. So if we know how to recognize the suffering that is our child, and how to cradle it like that while we breathe, there is relief already. And as we continue cradling, embracing that suffering, and we can look deeply into the nature of the suffering, we will be able to make a breakthrough into understanding what is there. And we will gain that understanding, that insight into the suffering that will liberate us. After having embraced the child for some minutes, the mom discovers the reason, the cause for the child's suffering. Maybe the baby is hungry. Maybe the baby has a little fever. And after having seen that, it's very easy to transform the situation. The same is true with us. After we have cradled, embraced our suffering for some time, looked deeply into the nature of that suffering in terms of food, what has been feeding it, causing it, the Buddha said nothing can survive without food. Our love has to be fed every day. Suffering is also like that. Suffering cannot survive without food. If we continue suffering, it's because we keep feeding that suffering. When we look deeply into the nature of the suffering, we see the source of food that we've used to feed that suffering. For example, a depression. We have lived in a way, we have consumed in a way that have caused this depression to become a reality. So when we look into that depression deeply, we will discover the sources of food that have brought on the depression in us. And it is the Buddha who said that, and Shariputra who repeated it several times. The Buddha said this: What has come to be? Here we speak about the suffering or the depression. If you look deeply into its nature and recognize the sources of food, nourishment that brought it into being, you are already on the path of emancipation. Recognizing the causes, the sources of food with which you have nurtured your pain, your suffering, your depression. Recognizing the sources of nourishment that is already the beginning of transformation and healing. So, for happiness, we know how to nourish happiness with mindfulness. We get in touch with the wonderful elements of life in us and around us. The conditions of happiness that are available. We don't need to run around. We don't have to go looking in the future. They're already there. With mindfulness, we can discover the fact that the conditions of happiness are already sufficient. More than sufficient. And happiness is possible. The French have a song called Qu'est-ce qu'on attend pour être heureux? What are we waiting for to be happy? It means there are conditions for celebrating now. You walk to celebrate. When you breathe like that, it's to celebrate. When we sit like that, we are celebrating. We're celebrating life. Deeply into our depression, we see the sources of nourishment of that depression, and we are motivated by the desire to cut short these sources of food. Without food, your depression will die. Suffering is like happiness. Without food, it cannot survive. So in Buddhism, we speak of happiness and happiness in terms of food. The Buddha said, nothing can survive without food. Neither happiness nor suffering can survive without food. We have the practice of the five mindfulness trainings to protect us. This is the practice of true love. The five mindfulness trainings are a very concrete expression of the practice of love. Love for ourselves and love for the other person and for our planet. It is doable, it's possible. We have spoken about why. such a way that every step brings happiness and joy. We have talked about sitting. When we sit like that, we feel the spring breeze. Our presence and the other person's presence, we enjoy. Today we can talk about how to eat. In Plum Village, we eat as a community. During the meal, we practice mindfulness, always mindfulness. The object of mindfulness during the meal, there are only two, the food and the person with whom you're eating. Your loved ones. And if you are eating with the Sangha is your loved one, your beloved. And this is a practice that dates back very long. We eat in such a way that peace is possible for the whole time of eating. Freedom from fear, from anxiety, from anger. If there are fear, anxiety, and anger, that is not a meal. There's no joy in that. So when you're sitting there eating with your loved ones, you have to be free of those afflictions. Anger, fear, jealousy, they can ruin everything. You want to maintain your freedom during the meal. Let us eat in such a way that freedom is possible during the entire time of eating. Let us eat in such a way that brotherhood and sisterhood are possible during the whole time of eating. I'm here. I know that you're there, and it's a happiness to sit and eat with you. And the happiness continues. So we eat in such a way that freedom, brotherhood, and sisterhood and happiness are possible during the whole time of eating. And in Plum Village, we eat like that every day. And silence helps a lot. Thanks to silence, we can maintain our mindful breathing. We can observe our body. Our feelings. We can feel our body relaxing, our feelings relaxing. This is the basis of happiness. So when lovers eat dinner, they need a practice for the happiness to be genuine. We can stop the internal mental chatter, breathe, smile. We should be mindful, aware that this is a moment of happiness. To have the time to eat with the one you love, you have to arrange yourself, arrange your time. The place should be appropriate. The food should be appropriate. Because what we eat is very important. Tell me what you eat, and I will tell you who you are. Tell me where you eat, and I will tell you who you are. Very important. We have to arrange. because the meal is a practice, and this was a reality. This has been a reality for 2,500 years already. We always eat in this way, in silence, with the mindfulness, the other person is there, the Sangha is there, and we eat in a way that freedom is possible during the whole time of eating, and also brotherhood, sisterhood. Love is a loving brotherhood and sisterhood. We have the five contemplations that we recite before we eat. This is mindfulness. This food, object of mindfulness during the meal. The food and also the person we're eating with. This food is the gift of the whole universe. This is insight. The piece of carrot that you're holding is an ambassador of the cosmos, the entire cosmos. There's the sun, there's the rain, the earth, work. And all of those things have come together to nourish you. It's a true ambassador of the cosmos, the sun, the earth, and you only need 1 second to have mindfulness of that, to recognize the respected ambassador that you're about to put in your mouth. And when you chew only the carrot. Don't chew your projects and your worries. Eating is an art. It's a very deep art to eat as a lover. It's not good for your health to chew, to ruminate your projects, your pain, your anxiety. You should only chew the carrot. And while you chew in that way, you're in touch with the entire universe, because that ambassador is there. We eat each mouthful of our food in this way with mindfulness and concentration. And you're also aware that the other person is there and practicing the same thing. Happiness is possible during the meal, and silence helps enormously. After about 20 minutes, you may like to invite a sound of the bell. And you may like to exchange a few words. As you may find, after 2 sounds of the bell, it can also be very nice to keep the silence, because the silence is so delicious. It's not really necessary to talk. This food is the gift of the whole universe, the earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard work. There's a lot of love in that. Loving work. This is a contemplation that puts you in touch with the insight that the one contains the all. That piece of carrot contains the sun, the rain. It's a wonder. Joy is possible. Second contemplation. May we eat with mindfulness, gratitude, and love in order to be worthy to receive this food. When love is there, when gratitude is there, we are a happy person. Without love, without gratitude, there is no happiness. So the first contemplation brings the feeling of love and gratitude that makes our happiness and the happiness of the other person. The third contemplation. May we recognize and transform unwholesome mental formations, particularly our greed, and learn to eat with moderation. To eat with moderation. Is what the Buddha was always reminding his monks to do. To eat with moderation. To have a light body, healthy, almost every illness comes by the way of the mouth. So we want to look into what we eat and know what you should eat and what you should not eat. You look with the eye of the Buddha. The quality of the food and the quantity of the food is very important. Every monk or nun traditionally has a bowl, an alms bowl. And this bowl is called the vessel of appropriate measure. It helps the monk or nun know how much food to take. When they get too much, they give it to others. The vessel of appropriate measure. So the bowl helps a lot. And we know exactly what quantity of food we want to consume, as well as the quality. This body was transmitted to us by our ancestors. We should keep it healthy. And to do that, we need to know how to eat. So please discuss with your loved ones. The quality and the quantity of food that you want to consume. May we keep our compassion alive by eating in such a way that we reduce the suffering of living beings, preserve our planet, and reverse the process of global warming. We eat in mindfulness. We eat with compassion. The Buddha transmitted to us a teaching on the four kinds of nutriments, the four kinds of food that we consume. Very deep. The first source of nutriment, the first food, is edible food that goes in through our mouth. There are other kinds of food that goes in through our ears, our eyes, or our mind, but the first kind of food is the edible food. The Buddha told the story of a couple living in a country where they could not live anymore. They couldn't stay in their homeland and they had to escape. They had a little boy. They had to cross a desert in order to reach another safe place, but they did not calculate correctly and they didn't have enough food. And they realized halfway through the desert that they were all going to die. So after having reflected on this, they made a terrible decision to kill the child, to eat the boy. This is a true story told to the Buddha by a refugee couple. The young father, the young mother ate a piece of that flesh of their child every single day and kept the rest on their shoulder to dry in the sun. And finally, they did arrive to the other country and were accepted as refugees. During that journey, every time they ate a piece of their child's flesh, they suffered so much. They pulled out their hair. They beat their chest. They cried to themselves, "Where is our beloved child now?" And after having told this story, the Buddha looked at his monks and he asked them this question, "Dear friends, do you think that young couple enjoyed eating the flesh of their own little boy?" "It's impossible," the monks responded. The Buddha said, "We should eat in such a way that we can keep our compassion alive. If not, we are eating the flesh of our own children." This story in this little book that just came out in French. In the English, it's called The World We Have. It came out in English 2 or 3 years ago. UNESCO, the United Nations Economic Organization, reported about several thousand, many thousands of children die every day, every year, for lack of food. To produce alcoholic beverages or meat, it takes a lot of grain. To make alcohol, a lot of grain. And if we use this grain for that purpose, we could use it instead to feed people. We are eating too much meat. We're drinking alcohol. We're eating the flesh. We are drinking the blood of our own children. That is insight. And the United Nations proposed, this is the Food and Agricultural Organization now, that the meat industry should be reduced by 50% at least in order to save our planet, because raising livestock is destroying the forests, polluting the water. The planet cannot survive like that. In my last visit to Vietnam, I advised my friends to reduce the consumption of meat by at least 50%. Buddhists in Vietnam already have the habit of eating vegetarian 10 days per month. So to ask for 5 more days, that's not so much. It's doable. 15 days, 2 weeks. Of consuming. When we begin in that way, we reduce the meat industry. We can bring it closer to half. I said, dear friends, if possible, please eat vegetarian to save your planet. And you can start with 15 days. And it begins to nourish the compassion. If you know that you're living in a way that makes a future possible for your planet, you have joy. And when you're sitting there with your loved one, you eat in such a way that that joy remains. The planet is us. When we love someone, we love also what that person loves. So I love planet Earth. So if you love me, you have to love planet Earth. Fifth contemplation. We accept this food with gratitude so that we may nurture our brotherhood and sisterhood, build our Sangha, and nourish our ideal of serving all living beings. So the practice of true love is done through our walking, our sitting, our eating, our playing. When you look at the TV, you should do that with mindfulness, because our children are taking in a lot of TV programs with a lot of violence, toxic elements. 2, 3, 4 hours of TV per day. A lot of toxins, poisons. There are very good TV shows. Wonderful. And as a lover, you should consume TV with mindfulness. I remember one time a lady came to interview the sisters of New Hamlet. A that was for L magazine, French L. She was talking with the sisters, and I came by to visit, and she, the journalist, took that opportunity to interview me. She wanted me to talk about meditation, about mindfulness, but I thought to offer an exercise more practical, more useful. So this is what I proposed to the readers of L as a practice. Madam, this evening, after the meal, when your husband turns on the television, you can practice breathing in deeply, calming your body and your mind. And with a smile, you can address him and say, "Darling, would you mind to turn off the TV? I have something I'd like to talk with you about." With loving speech, you will address him like that. He might be a little irritated. He's waiting for you to start a fight. A quarrel, something like that. And after he turns off the TV, you continue smiling and you say, "Darling, why are we not happy as a couple? It seems like we have everything. Your salary and mine, we have good salaries. We have a beautiful house. We have everything. Bank account. Why aren't we happy? Can we take a few minutes to reflect on that? We started out very well. There was happiness, but why is there no happiness anymore? Can we talk together to find the reason, to find a way?" That's meditation. That's real meditation. And normally, we just blame the other person. But both people are responsible. They don't know how to nourish love and happiness. They don't know how to handle suffering or help the other person to handle suffering. So, madam, for the sharing to be useful and good, you have to say something like, I have made mistakes. I thought, I've spoken, I've acted in a way that harmed our happiness, that damaged our love. It's important to come back to ourself and look, and if we can recognize the way, our way of thinking, of speaking, of acting, we can tell the other person we're sorry for having thought or acted in harmful ways, ways that destroyed our love. If you're sincere with mindfulness, you can express your desire to begin anew, to begin anew. So this is an exercise we can have in every home. It starts with turning off the television and having a Dharma sharing. We can use loving speech, normal language. We look deeply into our situation, and you may like to initiate this sharing, this conversation. The journalist I thought this would be a useful way. When the two people suffer, they look in the same direction, and it's the television. So as a lover, a true lover, the direction you look in is peace. You need to practice to nourish your love and help each other to handle suffering in you, in him, in her, and in the world. Because people are suffering all around us, and we have to offer our support, and this is possible to do. And when we can help people suffer less, our happiness grows. In Plum Village, we have our way of organizing retreats a little bit everywhere, all over the world. In America, in Europe, in Asia. And every time after a retreat of 5, 6, 7 days, there's always a transformation, reconciliation of partners, and that nourishes us very much and nourishes our happiness. You are lovers. You can dream, you can think in such a way. You can help others to suffer much less. You already know how to nourish happiness in the two of you. You already know how to handle suffering in yourself and in the other person. And then you can start to help others. That is looking in the same direction. And this consolidates and increases our happiness. I hope that all of you were able to get the love meditation sheet. I think our friends in New Hamlet do have it already. I hope the other Hamlets also do. We will continue tomorrow.